This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Oh, hey! Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, as always, Shane Told, speaks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a professional rock and roll band. Today, we got a great episode. It's funny, you know. I finished doing this episode and AJ said to me, "Dude, I think you got more out of me than anyone ever has." So definitely this is a must listen if you're a fan of The Dangerous Summer. If you're not, stick around anyways, because The Dangerous Summer is one of the most underrated bands of the scene, maybe ever. But I got great news for you. They are back. They have a new record. They've recorded. I've even heard it. It's amazing. They've played a couple shows, and there's going to be a lot more to be announced super soon. So get excited. Get excited for this episode. It's a good one. And thanks again to AJ for taking the time and really pouring his heart and his soul and his honesty into this episode. I really, really do appreciate it. Before we get into that, again, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to my show. If you like it, go on iTunes, write a review, preferably 5 stars. Tell your friends. Let's help spread the word. That stuff all really, really helps this show grow. We've got a lot of really great guests coming up. I can't spill the beans on who they are just yet, but we're approaching episode 100. I'm excited for that. And really, it's just amazing when I think back 100 episodes. I never thought, you know, I would be doing this long, or this so many of you people would like care about this show so much. So thank you for being here. As always, if you want to get in touch, email address, super simple, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I check all of my email. I am not great at writing back, but I do read it all. And of course, we're on social media. We got an Instagram page and a Twitter and all that stuff. And of course, if you're interested in more than just the one episode per week, don't worry, the podcast will always be free. But if you're interested in more stuff, more content, more access with me, hanging out with some of the other fans of the show on a Facebook group, and even in person, we're doing that now. Check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. The link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. In other news with me, I'm heading over to Germany tomorrow for a 14-day German-exclusive Silverstein tour, headlining. It's almost all sold out. If we have any sinners in Germany, please, please pop by, say hello. I love meeting fans of the show. I love hearing about what your favorite episodes are and all that stuff. So please, if you run into me in public or at a show, definitely, definitely say hello. And of course, Silverstein, we have a new record, Dead Reflection. It is out now. Go give it a spin on Spotify or pick up the CD or whatever it is. However you listen to music these days, it probably is not a CD. But hey, rest in peace to those plastic discs. Anyways, let's jump in. Here's my chat with AJ Perdomo of The Dangerous Summer. And there is something in your face that pulls me far enough away.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, AJ. How you doing, man?
Good. How you doing?
Very, very well. Very well.
Never
better.
FaceTime audio, man. I like it.
It's good. A lot of people even now, in whatever the fuck year it is, still don't know about it. And it's like, I use it all the time because it pretty much uses data,
yeah.
But not very much, and it sounds so much better than a phone call.
Oh, does it? Nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's way better. So, hey, well, dude, so good to have you. Big news, your band, The Dangerous Summer, is back.
We're back. Yeah, we are.
You're back. And first of all, that's great news. I'm a huge fan of your band.
Dude, thanks,
always
man.
Loved you guys. And was sad, you know, to see you guys kind of wrap it up in what seemed like kind of right when you were just kind of hitting your stride. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we fell apart, man.
Yeah.
It sucks. Yeah, and 4 years ago, and yeah, now we're back, man. It feels good to be back. I'll have to say that.
Absolutely. Well, I know, I mean, I know when you gave me your phone number and I texted you, I saw a California number. So I assume you're living out on the West Coast. You have a child.
Yeah.
You have a child now, I understand. Are you married?
I do.
What's going on in your life?
Yeah, so married. I have a daughter, Luna. She's 3 years old now. And actually, so yeah, I live out in Burbank, suburb of Los Angeles, for people who don't know. And it's kind of like the nicest place I know out here, just because it's like it reminds me of home. Like, it's suburby, you know. There are lawns and, you know, little picket fences and stuff. You know, it's not like super city. Mm-hmm. So I like it out here. But actually, so in October, I'm headed back east. I'm kind of headed more back into the band world. You know, like, we're back. I'm going to go home and regroup and head out on tour, hopefully for the next year or so.
So, I mean, first question, like, what the fuck have you been doing for the last 2 years?
I got a 9-to-5 job. I kind of fell into like this like cinema world. Like, I worked for like a cinema technology company.
Okay.
And it, in like the service department, like cameras and lenses, like super high end stuff. And yeah, I don't know. It's just like a normal 9-to-5. And yeah, I kind of left music for years, you know.
Well, you know, I don't have any kids. You know, I'm 36. I still have any kids. I'm not married or anything, but. You know, I hear from friends of mine and people that it really does change you and change your priorities. Is that what 100%. Happened to you? You had your daughter, and then all of a sudden you were like, "Well, my band's kind of a struggle. I'm kind of not exactly loving it every moment of time, and I have this beautiful baby girl. I want to spend time with her." Is that what happened?
Yeah, exactly.
That must have been a big part of the demise of the band.
Yeah, that was a big part of it, is like, yeah, and I have read about it, like the way your brain changes naturally, like when you have a child. It's like, you know, I kind of went into straight like defensive mode. I was like, I need to go home, you know, I need to be with my family, you know. And like I had some rough situation in my band, like with the one guitarist, and I like thought to myself, I was like, I don't want to bring her into this world that's going on right now. Like, we're in such like a dark place, you know, as a band. And
totally,
it is the way everything was headed. It was just like, I needed to like get away. I needed to go home, take care of my family, and so I did. And it's like, you know, they say everything happens for a reason. It's like, it had to have happened like that, you know, like all the shit we went through, you know, like it's all necessary to get to where you are now, you know.
Isn't that amazing? That's the thing, right? It's like, you know, I'm sure if you had it all again, you would, and, you know, knowing what you do now, you'd do things differently. But that doesn't necessarily mean you'd be in a better place right now.
Exactly.
That's the incredible part of that. And it really, like, there's I'm sure there's people much smarter than you and I that have written books about it. But it's,
oh yeah.
But it really is, and like, it really is a mind fuck when you start getting into it.
And like Back to the Future, I mean, that's the perfect idea of it. It's like, don't fuck with it, you know, like stay to the path. Although they did fuck with it, and it like turned out to be a good ending. So it's not like the best way to say it. But,
I don't know. I like Back to the Future Part One. Love it. I'm staring at my bookshelf.
Yeah.
I have the box set over on my bookshelf. Big fan.
I love it.
Love it.
Huge fan.
Number
yeah,
two
oh, yeah.
is great, but the ending, what the hell?
There, oh my God.
There's not even
I
an ending.
I love it.
You love
no,
it?
But
how it goes into the third one?
I love that point. Okay. When the dude from Western Union shows up and he's like, "Are you Marty McFly?" That is like one of the best parts of cinematic history. I love that part. It's like, what a genius who came up with that idea, you know?
Oh, absolutely. But no.
It did take a crazy turn, like in
did.
The other direction.
It did. And yeah, the third one is. I'll admit I don't throw it on as often as the first or second one, but
yeah.
But hey, yeah, no. Shout out to Michael J. Fox and my Canadian brother. That's right.
Oh, he's Canadian? Nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing about Canadians is, I'm Canadian. I don't know if you knew that, but
I did know that. Like, okay. Yeah, I knew you were Canadian. And actually, I saw you guys live like forever ago with Comeback Kid and Rise Against.
Oh, yeah.
Like way back in the day. That was like what, like 7 years ago or something?
It was
like that?
Actually 10 years ago. It was 2007.
Wow, man. And that was sick. And they're Canadian too. Comeback Kid.
Yeah, they are. We just played we just played a show with them on Saturday. Isn't that weird?
Oh, I love them, man. I used to love them so much, man.
They have a new record. It just came out, I think, on like 2 weeks ago, and it's awesome.
Oh, really? Nice.
Check it out. That's a question for you, though, right there. Over the last 4 years, you know, obviously, I'm sure you know a lot about the latest film technology and cameras, and I bet the next Dangerous Summer video is going to look great. But have you been keeping up with like music, with the scene? Because a lot of people, they get out of it and they just sort of like, they just turn it off because they're sick of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I never was too involved in like keeping up with bands in the scene anyway, you know, like I feel like we just kind of ended up here. Like I listen to lots of like really mainstream music, you know, like I love like Kings of Leon and Taylor Swift. Like I've been listening to them for the past 4 years, and The National, you know, I love The National. And I mean, it's like rare. Like I find like some innovative ass band, which actually yesterday I just found this band, the band Camino. Everyone should check them out. They're fucking killer, man.
I saw you tweeting about them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. What a fucking good band. It's just like, you know, that like sometimes I look at our music scene, like, man, you know, like, people need to like try harder, you know, like make cooler stuff these days, you know, like some people kind of are stuck back in time, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of people are don't want to stick out their neck. You know,
yeah,
that's part of it. I think like it's easy to play it safe a lot of times. You know, especially now because I don't know, man, it's like, it's the time, like I call it it's the era of YouTube comments.
You know what I mean? Oh my God.
And I just had the episode I just put out. Well, I don't know when we'll put this out, but 1 or 2 weeks ago, you know, I was talking to the guys from We Came as Romans about how we're pretty sure some people make YouTube comments without even listening to the song. You know what I mean? They like people just have something
100%.
Set. They have something set in their minds that they're just going to say it. And it's like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't anyway. So you think like, people would be like, well, what the hell? Let's give it a try. But so often, things come out so stock.
Oh, I know, yeah. 100%. And what I think, like, I really think, like, the way we're headed with this future is, like, people care more about a single. Like, a band will just release a song just to, like, get it out, get it on Spotify, you know, do the whole, like, Spotify playlist thing. It's less about an album. It's like, you know, like growing up being like our age, like we remember CDs. These kids don't know what CDs are. They're like, what the hell is this? They throw on Spotify. They want one song from a band, you know, like they'll throw it on some big ass playlist, you know, and like everyone's becoming like more casual listeners. Like it's hard to capture it so hard anymore, you know?
Well, you know, I think that this stems, and this is something we could talk about all day. I really want to get to more. I want to get some more stuff about your band and you guys being back, but I will touch on this really quick while we're on the topic. Yeah. I think that when record labels started freaking out, when downloading became so prevalent, and bands were still selling a ton of records, like even when you guys put out your first record, bands were still selling like a lot of records.
Oh yeah, but we relied on it.
But that was the time when, you know, the 99-cent single became a thing. And the whole music industry model for fucking decades was you promote a song, you put it on the radio, you promote a video, but you sell everybody a full-length album. So you promote a song that's like 3 minutes, but you sell them a 45-minute album. And and you sell it to them for whatever, $15, $10, whatever it is, right? Now, you're basically screwing yourself because you're promoting a song and you're selling a song, and that's it. And everyone gets what they want, and they don't have to buy the whole record. So all of a sudden, you're losing 90% of your sales right
there. Yeah, it's the damn truth, man.
But then the other thing is it hurts the artist so much, too, because you talk about now with playlists. So you have, like, some kid
say, music fan, loves music. He's got a playlist, and he's got, like, let's say he's got 20 bands on his playlist. Well, he's got 20 songs that he likes. When that band rolls through town, is he going to go see them play for 2 hours to see the one song that he knows?
Yeah, no.
Hell no, he's not. So it creates such a problem with bands, because it used to be, okay, hey, you love that song on the radio by Def Leppard, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Love the song. Well, you buy the record, and guess what? You love all the rest of the songs, too. They become your favorite band. You wear the T-shirts. You know what I mean? You read the interviews in the magazines. You become a fan. And now, there aren't as many fans because, like, you know, and that's why I think if you start going down the road of trying to promote singles, fine. You might have some big songs, but that's not going to make your band any bigger.
100%. I believe in that.
There's rant over and rant.
Yeah, but that was it. Like, you really ran through the whole system. That was pretty good. I like that. Well, good explanation.
Well, thank you. I mean, I do this every week. I've figured out some things myself. You know, but back to my question I asked you, you've been out of the loop a little bit. Like, the music industry has changed. Spotify,
way out of the
loop. When you guys put out a Golden Record, Spotify wasn't a thing. That was your last album. It was not a thing, and now it's a thing. So what are you, have you thought of this? Have you wrapped your head around this, the fact that, like, basically you're not on Earth anymore, you're pretty much on Mars?
Yeah, it literally, like, coming into this, like, when we were getting back together, like, my manager was like, listen, like, things are different now. It really was like waking up, you know, in another distant time, and it's like, this is what we do now. It's not, like you said, it's not about album sales anymore. Like, even, like, Hopeless, they said to me, they're like, yo, we're not going to print that many CDs. Like, you know that, right? And I'm like, what? I'm like, what the hell? They're like, yeah, they don't sell. I mean, like, try to sell these fucking things, you know? It's all about vinyl, you know? And so they're like, yeah, let's get in on the vinyl and then, you know, get on Spotify playlists. And it's like, what the hell happened? Like, it all sounds backwards, you know?
Dude, it's crazy.
I'm interested to see, you know, like, I can't wait to dive in and see what happens. And honestly, like, is you, like, see, there's, like, there's this giant revival of our scene and this music. It's like everyone in the community, it's like coming up now, you know, like with things like Emo Night and all this, like it's kind of like the subculture has a new, like, breath to it, you know?
Well, I've always felt like the Dangerous Summer was a little under the radar. And now, especially, I'd say your first record has become kind of a classic. Like, well, you were, you know, hibernating, you know, focusing on other things. I feel like a lot of people discovered all of your, you know, your... Hey. Oh, hello.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
What's his or her name?
Taylor.
Taylor. Beautiful.
Yeah, named after Taylor Swift.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Taylor. But, like, you're 100% right. Everything's so, like, you know, I think a lot of bands from my era, though, like, we all kind of, like, ran out of steam, you know, like I was up there with, like, you know, Go Radio, We Are The In Crowd, like, all these bands my age that were kind of doing things, like, we were trying to peek into the scene at a very weird time, you know, and, like, all of us just kind of, like, fell flat at the end of the day, you know, we all, like, broke up eventually, and I feel like we kind of missed these two gaps of time where it's like, yeah, there was CD sales, like, in the, you know, 2000s, early 2000s and up. And then, like, there was, like, this whole Spotify thing going on now. It's like we were in this weird gap, you know, right in the middle. And I think all of us, we didn't know what to do in a lot of ways. Like, none of us were getting that big or to the next level.
Right.
You know, could be there.
But you guys have been given an opportunity now. I mean, you guys went away and you broke up, and it's like sometimes breaking up can be the best thing you can do.
Oh yeah.
And now your music is just there. It's like it exists. You guys aren't putting out new music. It's just there, and a lot of people have discovered it. A lot of people. So talk to me about that, because I mean, I'm sure, you know, you're still on Twitter, you're still seeing people being like, "Oh my god, I just found out about this band," and you're like, you know, I just heard Permanent Rain for the first time or whatever. And this stuff has been happening, and you're going to find when you start playing shows, you're going to have these new fans that have never heard your band, never seen your band before.
Yeah, that is a surreal thing. And honestly, like, one of the things coming into here is we're like, we have no clue how big we are right now. Like, we're just going to go out there and see what happens. Cause I mean, yeah, it's been like 4 years and, dude, all these new fans that discover us, it's crazy. And a lot of them discover us because of like things like Pandora now, you know, and Spotify Radio. They're all finding this new like music discovery avenue where it's like, yeah, you hear like the Permanent Rain will pop up and they'll be like, oh, I'll check out this band. And I think a lot of our newer fans came up that way. And yeah, they haven't seen us since we've been gone for 4 years.
Totally. No, it really is a crazy thing. So you named your dog after Taylor Swift. You're talking about Kings of Leon and all this stuff. How did you, I want to talk a little bit about your musical upbringing, because I don't know if it's something you've talked about a whole lot. Obviously there was some point in your life where you kind of found punk rock or you found underground music.
Yeah.
No problem.
Sorry, my dog.
It's fine, man. But, does she want to come on and say hi?
Luna, say hello.
Hello.
Hello, yeah, Luna.
That's little Luna. But, yeah, so like I kind of had, a lot of different vibes growing up. Hey, Luna. But, so like, okay, around middle school, here's where I'll start. I really got into like the Lookout Records scene, like, Screeching Weasel, the Mr. T Experience, right? Like all this kind of like underground, like punk rock stuff. And I used to buy the compilations, you know, like Hopeless compilations and all the Lookout Records, and there's this one called Punkzilla with Nitro Records, and
yeah,
bands like AFI and stuff. You know, I started getting into like kind of more specific, like kind of the Warped Tour scene. I remember getting a Warped Tour compilation, like 2002 or 2003. You know, heard bands like Taking Back Sunday for the first time, Brand New, and then I kind of like I went through this phase where I kind of rejected a lot of the like poppier stuff, like as I was getting older and I started getting into like the Bouncing Souls and some more like Comeback Kid, more punk rock stuff. And I really loved ska during that time, like Streetlight Manifesto and Catch 22. So yeah, I went on a weird journey through music, and I don't know, growing up, I eventually got to like, when I was playing songs, you know, they put us in kind of like the emo scene and like listen to a lot of that stuff. And then now I'm just an old guy listening to like Kings of Leon and Taylor Swift and
see,
the National.
my story is very similar to yours. Like, I mean, I got into, I was into like metal and stuff and Metallica and Guns N' Roses, but then same thing for me, it was the Fat Records compilations. And Hopeless Records as well. And those bands, that really like got me into, you know, punk rock and the scene and local shows and all that stuff. But I haven't lost that at all, man. Like you'll still see me. Like I went to see Lagwagon a couple months ago, like by myself.
Oh, nice.
You know what I mean? So
that's
I'm still fully in. So I kind of wonder how you just like lose that. I mean, obviously I do like some of the stuff that's more mainstream, but I've like not lost my love for, you know, I'm thinking of other like bands on Lookout Records. Like the Queers, I guess. Were they on Lookout Records?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Queers.
You know, I mean, like that scene, I like still love that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I definitely still love it. I would totally go see that band, those bands. I feel like I just don't listen to that much music. Like, I wish I listened to more music, you know? Like, every once in a while, a band will come on that I love, and I'll, you know, listen to the album a bunch of times, and then I kind of just, like, go back to not listening to music for a while, you know, like I just kind of go through these weird phases, like, because I also love like podcasts and like Howard Stern. I listen to a lot of Howard Stern.
Yeah,
like I love listening to like talk stuff, you know, like I'll just put on talk radio and just listen to it for hours.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, man. I listen to a lot of sports talk radio actually. So
nice.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's funny. No, I guess like what happens is I think at some point in your 20s, you know, probably for you and me both, you just get so into music and you're trying to have a band and you're trying to get big and you're trying to get these tours and then you just get burnt out on it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I definitely got mad burnt out on all of it, man. It is tiring. Like people don't know what it's like what it does to your like head, you know. It's like you get worn out sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And if you don't like take care of yourself and take care of what you need to take care of, like you'll drive yourself fucking crazy, you know.
No, totally. Well, you know, yeah, your band, I mean, it was when you guys were out about, you know, touring and stuff, I just remember you guys just, it seemed like you were always dropping off tours.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you're dropping off the Hit the Lights tour and the Tonight Alive tour and the Versa Emerge tour and like these are just ones off the top of my head I remember.
Yeah,
like it seemed like you guys had a lot of problems and struggles, and I don't know what those were. If you can comment on those, if those were internal problems, if they were business things, health issues, like what was going on, and why do you think you guys had such a difficult time, you know, making it work?
I think a lot of it was like, yeah, there was a internal struggle in the band. Like me and, the guitarist, like, you know, we just like had a rough relationship and, it was just like, we would just wear out. Like, I feel like after every fucking album we wrote, we just broke up. 'Cause like we put so much of ourselves into it and we were just, you know, like fighting back and forth about this and that. And it was just like every time around, it just came to like, oh, we're going to peace out for now. But actually, like, so like the Tonight Alive one, that wasn't our fault. They like offered us some money and then they said, actually, we can't pay you this money.
So, oh, yeah, okay.
So we had to do that. Versa Emerge, yeah, there was a fight, which I wasn't in the room for, but between my old guitarist, Cody, and the dude from Versa Emerge, and I don't know, like they said stuff back and forth, and then we like had to leave the venue, and then so yeah, we went home after that, and yeah, wow. It was just like, yeah, and right before the Hit the Lights tour, like we broke up as a band basically.
Yeah, but
we just didn't ever like really tell anyone or like talk about it because we were like, you know, maybe someday I'll just, you know, blow over and we'll get back together.
Right.
So it was like we kept just breaking up and it was just problem after problem, and now it's like coming back and without him in it, it's just like we're all passive dudes, like we just chill, like everything's really good right now. So I think hopefully, you know, like we can keep doing this as long as possible.
Absolutely.
But, you know, also, as you know, like I said, it's hard being in a band, you know.
It is, man.
I know. Fucking rough.
I know very well. Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up Cody a couple times and the rough relationships and the rocky relationship with him. And, you know, it seemed like when you guys were together, he was kind of, in a way, the spokesman of the band. I know he had a lot to do with the business side of the band. And, you know, he was the original member or whatever. And I think that it took the spotlight off you, but maybe not in the best way, to where it seemed like it was kind of like his band and you were like his sort of puppet. And what was that like for you when you guys were together working? And obviously I know part of why you left the band was because you were like, well, this dude is robbing us blind. And then it turned out that he not only was robbing you guys blind, but he was literally charged with burglary a couple years after. So it doesn't seem like he was very above board.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, like, I don't know, just, like, he's got his own, like, situation in his life. Like, I love the dude, talented guy. Like, I wish him the best of luck, but it's just, like, we just can't exist in the same universe anymore, you know?
Right.
And, like, I mean, we grew up together. I mean, like, I knew him since we were like young teenagers, and we were just always, I don't know, he just always kind of like pushed me to do it and to go along the ride with him, you know. And he was always like the more dominant one in the band, always doing the business decisions, and I would I would write all the melodies and lyrics, and we'd come up with progressions together and come up with ideas together, and we would just always bounce stuff off each other, you know. We were like that team of like, oh, is this cool? Yeah, that's cool. Let's do this, let's do that. And we kind of just always bounced the music off each other and wrote together for years. But like along with that came, like, you know, when you're working on an album and everyone's looking at you as the singer to be like, well, why isn't the song done? You know, like, mm-hmm. one of my problems is like a songwriter is like, God, I drive myself fucking crazy with these songs, you know, like sitting there for like 14 hours, like just repeating like a 30-second loop, trying to figure out what I want to do, you know, and like everyone's looking at me, and it got like very like him being like, you got to do this, come on, like, you know,
right.
And I think a lot of that like energy of like, come on, like there's a lot of weight on me, you know, and especially from him. And it just like, it always turned out in very negative situations, you know, like it was right. just always blow ups or this or that. And well, it's just, it's rough being a singer. Like, you know, you have this podcast, lead singer syndrome. And here we are, you know,
here we are talking about how hard our lives are. I know. But, you put Cody in pretty decent light. I mean, considering what it seems like happened. And that's, I mean, you know, I taking the high road, I respect you for doing that. But in a way, I mean, he's not a part of the project anymore. He's not going to be in the band. Obviously, you're going to be working on music with other people and yourself. So that's going to be a change. But don't you feel almost like you kind of need to shit talk him so people understand, like, what you went through, and that this is a necessary thing for the Dangerous Summer to exist now?
I mean, I don't want to be negative anymore. You know, like mm-hmm. he, like I know everything that he does, it's not him. You know, like everything that he did and every way he's fucked over me and everyone in like that he's ever fucked over, which is a lot of fucking people. I know it's not him, and like I hope he can get past this point in his life. You know, like I truly, like, you know, I can't exist in a world with him, but like I would never, you know, like
right.
tell the world what he did. You know, like I'm confident in myself to just say like I'm past that, and I really am past that. Like I'm really just trying to write the best music I can as the Dangerous Summer. You know, like. That's all I know, and that's what I'm going to keep doing, you know? But we just can't exist, you know?
No, I think that's fine. I mean, you put that very eloquently. That's great. I mean, you know, but he was saying things like, I think the one thing I read, I read it years ago when it happened, when you guys, you know, broke up, but I read it again yesterday when I was just kind of doing a little research on you. He literally says something like in a statement about like, I hope his child doesn't see him like that. You know, do you remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to me, that's like, that's the kind of shit like I would never get over, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, oh, bringing your family into it.
Oh, and there's it's way worse. Like, anything that the world knows, it's 100 times worse. But it's like I said, like, I'm way past it. You know, like, I'm just like, I'm all positivity. I'm good vibes. Like, I'm just looking at the future, and I'm pumped about the future. Like, I don't have time to dwell in the past and even think about him.
Like, well, no, but of course, like, you know, people remember you. It's the same band name. You know, you're still the front man. Like, is there any concern? Yeah. Like, you know, you guys probably developed a bit of a reputation. I'm sure a lot of it was Cody's fault. But still, like, you know, that there might be a little bit of, you know, the promoters might not remember or not might not know that, you know, like, those kinds of people that you need to be like, hey, we're back, and like, sorry about 4 or 5 years ago, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, one of the things coming back, and like, people were saying, hey, do you want to play these shows? Do you want to play these festivals and stuff? And I said, I just want to lead with an album. Like, so we immediately just started writing the album. And that's really all I feel like I can offer people is just the best music I can make. And that's all I'm going to do. You know, like, I'm leading with my heart. My heart's in this album that I just made. And that's what I have to offer the world. And, like, you know, if people don't love us because of something that happened in the past, like, suck it. You know, like,
yeah, of course,
I mean, in simple terms, like, I mean, it's just like, I'm just trying to make music here. Like, I'm sorry about all the shit that happened, but it's like, shit, I'm moving forward, you know, like, you're either with me or, like, you know, like, I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's really actually smart to do that, because if you think about it, right, like, sure, a bunch of time has passed, you know, a lot of people have just found out about your band, a lot of people have missed you, and sure, you could go out and you could play, you know, the hits, the songs that people have discovered, people know, not play any new material, maybe have a promise of it coming, but you've seen how that works out. Like, band does a reunion, it's huge because everyone's missed it, then, like, okay, we're going to go work on an album, and then when, by the time they're done the album, by the time they're back, it's old news. Like, you know what I mean? People aren't excited about the band anymore. So
yeah, exactly.
For you guys to do that, it's almost like, okay, we're just going to pick up where we left off. Well, we did Golden Record. We toured on it a little bit. Now we're going to put out a new record and we're going to tour on it a little bit. And yes, we'll play our old stuff, but we're going to play new stuff too. I think it's a smart approach, and it's also like, not, you know, I think that the chase the money, get the festival offers, play the big reunion shows, I think that is very short-sighted.
Yeah, and also I feel like we didn't really finish our story, you know, like, our story's not over. Like,
right.
I feel like this next album, you know, like, this is like the continuation. Like, I don't want people to feel like, oh, remember that band that used to be a band? Like, I want people to be like, oh, they're coming out with a new album, you know.
Yeah.
It took Lord 4 years to make an album. Why can't it take us 4 years?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, Dr. Dre didn't break up and come back, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
He just was, you know, doing other things for a minute, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, too. You know, being a family man now, you know, having Luna and Taylor, you know, and your family. Are you a little bit scared about, you know, you're going out east, you're making a record, you're going to be spending time away from that, you're going to go on tour, you're going to do some stuff. Is that a little bit scary for you now that you've kind of, obviously you're a bit of a different person than you were the last time you, you know, were on a tour bus?
Yeah, it's definitely like, it's going to be nuts, you know, but like, so we finished the album in July.
Oh, it's done. Okay.
And like, yeah. So the album's actually done. So, I was working the 9 to 5, you know, and like my original plan was like, yeah, I'm gonna just tour when I can. Like, I'll just take vacation days, and like, you know, my company's real cool. They're like giving me the days and stuff. And then it kind of reached a point, and like, once the album was finished, it was like, we need to like really do this. You know, we need to really like put our energy into it. Like,
yeah.
I truly believe it. And that's the problem, is like, you know, like, you make this stuff and it's like, it's bigger than you. It sucks you in, you know, you just start to feel all these feelings, and maybe it's like, you know, smoke that I'm blowing, but it's like, I just feel the energy, and I feel like, you know, it's one of those like field of dream moments, you know, like, if you build it, they will come, you know? And I'm just like, fuck, I have to build the fucking baseball field, man.
Foolish like, Joe, man. He's coming. That's
so it's
funny.
Like, that's kind of where I'm at. And it's like, God damn it, man. It's like, they say, like, this music world, it's like prison, you know? Like, you can't go home.
That's such a funny reference. I remember, I'll never forget. So when I was in, like, college, my first year, I was never really, like, a show promoter or anything. But, like, you know, I helped out here and there with some friends. And this tour was supposed to come through like my hometown, and it was, Ludacris, which was before Norma Jean. They were called Ludacris.
Really?
And, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, shit, who else was on it? Lap Band, Living Sacrifice, and Zayo. And so I was like, I don't know if I should do it. Like, the package wants like $1,000. I was like, I don't know if I can do it, whatever. And somebody said to me, if you book it, bros will come.
Fuck yeah.
And I was like,
and did they?
The tour got canceled before I was able to book
shit.
It. So we don't know about the bros coming. But I still, whenever I hear that reference, you know, if you build it, they will come, I always think of if you book it, bros will come. So, but yeah. So have you guys announced – and pardon my ignorance, but have you guys announced any shows yet? An album release date? Anything like that? New song?
All right, so we actually, like, after we finished the album, we booked three shows, and we just played them last weekend. So we did, like, two Baltimore shows and a Pittsburgh show. We did, like, direct support for Taking Back Sunday in our hometown, which was so sick.
Nice.
And we did a headliner, like, in Baltimore, where we just played, like, a million fucking songs. And then we went up to Pittsburgh and did, like, this little festival with Starting Line and State Champs guys and everything. So we just been doing those three shows, and then we're going to do a headliner when our album comes out early next year. So, like, January, I think, we're going to just have everything, like, boom, album comes out, tour, everything. Like, basically, it kind of sucks because it's like we have our album. Like, we've been listening to it, but we have to wait, like, 3 months to get it out, yeah. You know, but it's just like the label wants time, management wants time. They're like, we need at least 12 weeks to build this up. And it's just like, I guess that's, you know, it is what it is. Like,
well, AJ, they need 12 weeks to press the vinyl now. That's a thing, man.
Oh, is that part
vinyl
of it?
Vinyl is so popular. A lot of people don't know this. Vinyl is so popular, but there's only so many pressing plants that it takes,
really?
Like, forever. So if they want to have the vinyl ready to go when the record comes out, they need a shitload of time. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, my God. I had no clue about that.
There you go. How did it feel to be back on stage?
Dude, it felt amazing. It was just like, it felt like nothing's ever changed. You know,
right,
like, even walking into the room together to play these songs again, it's like, I mean, God, we've played these songs a million times. Like, I didn't miss a beat, you know, like, we just started practicing and it just felt good again. And just to hear people singing again at us, it's just like, wow, like, nothing's changed, you know, like, it's fucking cool, man. I'm pumped, feeling good, feeling real good.
No, I love it. I love it. It's awesome. And I've been a big fan of your band since your first record, and it's really great.
Thanks so much,
you guys,
man.
Back. So yeah, you said early on in the interview, like, you don't have no idea how big your band is. Like, when you guys did this headlining show in Baltimore, was it just, like, crazy? Like, people hanging from the ceiling? Like, was it just incredible?
It was awesome. So what we did was, it was only like a 240 cap venue. And
right.
We just announced it real quick and it sold out in like 30 minutes. And then we just, like, so there's only like a certain amount of people that could be there. Like, honestly, they could have fit like 300 something people, you know, like, it's one of those rooms. And, but it was fucking amazing. Everyone's singing along and like the energy was just fucking perfect. It was unreal, you know, and to play all like the old shit, like, we could play, like, you know, we played actually most of our first record, Reach for the Sun. Like, we played like 8 out of 11 songs or 9 out of 11 songs. And then, you know, like, it's funny because, like, now coming back, like, we played, like, 8 songs off Reach for the Sun, like, 5 off War Paint, like, 2 off Golden Record. It's, like, now, like, the way we stack songs, like, I mean, so many people want to hear the old shit, too, you know, so.
Of course.
We got to give it to them, you know.
Well, it was pretty well documented on your last record. Your voice was different. And it was a lot, you know, raspy.
Very raspy.
Yeah. What's the story behind that? And, like, how is it holding up now? Is it, obviously, you've had some time to rest it.
Yeah. I mean, actually, so, like, what's funny is, like, my whole problem with writing music is, like, I was writing those songs in the studio and I was at a very, like, strained point with, like, the band situation. And I remember getting sick in the studio, and also, like, I recorded all the vocals like in the last 2 days or 3 days. So it's just like everything leading up to that. And then also on top of that is, like, one of the things with, like, you know, my thing with Cody is he was like, nah, like, I'm like, we're not changing the key on this song. And I'm like, but I just read the melody and it's so high. I'm like, please let's change it. So like a song, like, I don't know if you know the record well, but like Miles Apart, like, it's always been my dream to, like, re-record that song in like a really nice key, you know, like, and on this record I spent so much time like picking the keys, and I literally, like, we were in the studio for 2 weeks and I would record a song like pretty much every day or every 2 days, you know, like I'd slowly work my way through the album over the period. And yeah. I think that made my voice sound so much better. And actually it's funny, like when I played these shows like this past weekend, like, so we played our first show back with Taking Back Sunday, 3,000 people sold out. It was a fucking awesome show. I partied until 6 a.m. I like fucking raged so hard. I was so fucked up. I was hanging out with Brian from Have Mercy. I know you know him.
Yep. Right? Yep. Great dude.
Oh man. We were just raging all night. So the next I woke up, my voice is just fucking dead. And so like I had a rough time on Saturday and Sunday, but I ripped through it. Like I was happy with the way it turned out, but it's just like, yeah, I need to take better care of my voice. That's the moral of the story. Right. And also when recording albums, like I learned I need to space it out and I need to write the album more ahead of time. Like I used to go into like the studio with like one or two demos and be like, yeah, I'm just going to like write the rest while we're here. Like just dig it out of myself. And
well, sometimes that works though. I mean, like I'm kind of a pressure guy. Like I've written a lot of my best lyrics literally the night before I had to record them.
Yeah, it is always that, isn't it?
It happens to me.
Some of the best shit, yeah.
Yeah, but then you talk about sitting on your couch for 14 hours with a 30-second loop. I mean, that isn't always going to work for you, it sounds like, the way you work.
Exactly. That's the thing is, like, I kind of, like, mix it up. And honestly, like, the way that I found with this record, like, so I've been getting slowly into like doing more like the freestyle thing. I don't know if you like ever just get on the mic and just like jam out and just like kind of start singing out melodies loud, like
yeah,
at practice.
Sometimes it can really, you can come up with things you never would like work out, you know, more
exactly
scientifically.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, totally.
You get the feeling. So like I did a lot of freestyling and a lot of times, like with the older records, like we would write entire songs without melodies, and then I'd be fitting stuff on top.
Yeah.
And I've learned over time that like I like to make the progression and melody together, like at the same time before I bring it to that stage of, you know, being an actual song. Like,
yeah,
I don't like writing to music as much anymore. I like just pouring it out together, you know, it's like that marriage is supposed to happen and you feel it. It really becomes like a song once you feel that like certain energy, you know.
No, I totally know what you mean. And I think like a lot of bands, like I talk to bands all the time on this show, and I would say a vast majority of them still do that. Like they pretty much write all the music. Like one guy that I was surprised was Vic from Pierce the Veil. You know, they pretty much write the whole record like instrumentally, and they don't even think about the vocals.
Yeah, that's how we used to be too.
And then they're like, okay, well, and he's kind of like, and he defended it, but I mean, they're a great band and he's amazing. So, you know, whatever works for them, but like, you know, he's just like, yeah, well, we know it's going to work. We know the music's great. So I know like the chords, like the music makes sense. So I know I can I know I can put something over it. Kind of like, you know, if you have a good chord progression, you can put a guitar lead on it.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's kind of like the same vibe. So I get it, but I also totally get your vibe too. Like how many times have you, like I'm sure back in the day when you were a kid, you know, in younger, in you know, smaller bands, and I did this in some of my projects too. It's like you work on the music, and then you're so used to hearing the chords played in a certain way, it'd be like, well, what if I write a melody where if the chords are switched, like inverted, like you go to D first instead of going to C first or whatever, the melody's better.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're so used to hearing the music, like practicing it over and over again that way, that no one wants to change it.
Yeah, oh, 100%. That's like the whole demo-itis thing.
Yeah, man. Demo-itis, exactly.
That shit gets crazy, man. Especially like, man, when you're listening to like, even like our demos from this album, I'm like, oh, I like the demo better sometimes. And I'm like, fuck, you know? Like the things start to become ingrained in your head and you're like, I need it to be like that. Like, that's why even like, so like Matt, our guitarist on this one, he was like, you know, like I'm kind of waiting for more of the leads because I don't want to put something down because then we have to use it. Like, we're going to be listening to these songs so many fucking times. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be ingrained in us and then we're not going to like want to change it. You know, like you really get it that in your head.
I know.
It's hard to break free from that.
It is hard to break free from that. No, I think like this record, this last Silverstein record we didn't end up doing this, but our producer wanted to, and I totally understand why. He wanted us to record the drums last.
Really? Wow, and that's cool.
And he said that because he's like, well, pretty much, you know, the vocals are the thing that is usually getting figured out as you go. You don't have every vocal line. You don't know how long you're going to hold every note. You know what I mean? You don't know where the backup vocals are going to go exactly. But yeah, the drums are already pretty much set in stone when you're working that stuff out. But how cool would it be if you could have like, all right, I'm going to hold this note for like two bars, and right when the vocal cuts, that's when the drum fill starts.
Yeah.
Not like, well, I'm going to cut it early because the drum fill starts a bar early, but I'd rather the note go longer, and you know? So,
wow,
so
that's awesome.
Yeah, so a lot of the stuff he's recording, and his shout out to Derek Hoffman, a lot of stuff he's recording now, he's basically doing recording everything to a click and to like program drums.
Yeah.
And then kind of programming as he goes what the drums are going to do and changing it. And then at the end, the drummer just comes in and bangs it out. And then that way there's no arguments about what the drummer's going to do.
Yeah.
So
that's tight, man.
It's super, super unorthodox because every kid ever, it's like, well, you record the drums first. You know, and you got to, and then you got to record the bass and lock in the rhythm section or whatever. Like
I don't believe in that.
I know it's
actually
stupid. But
a lot
of people think
that. Record, on this last record, like I was like, dude, like let's leave the bass like for a while. Cause like, honestly, like, I mean, people always like make fun of me all the time, but like, I don't consider myself like a bassist, you know, like bass is kind of like the tool that I use, you know, like, I don't do anything crazy on the bass. Like, I stick to my progressions. I stick to, like, what the progression is. And, like, during the whole record, I was like, nah, let's just do it later. So, like, bass was, like, the last thing we recorded on the album.
Yeah.
We were just like, fuck it, just put it off. And I was, like, telling the producer, I was like, do you just want to record the bass? Like, I don't have time for this right now. You know, like, I hate to be like that, but it's like, I'm a singer. I'm a lyricist, and I write melodies and progressions, like,
Me,
like a bass is a tool, you know.
Bass players all over the world right now are like shaking their head and being like, "AJ, dude, come on, throw me a bone, yeah, come on,
fuck this guy." Oh man,
that's amazing.
Yeah, I didn't even own a bass. Like, I sold my bass after the thing, and I just have an acoustic guitar. I write everything on my one acoustic guitar, and then I just pick up the bass when I need to, you know, for live whatever. So
just borrow one from the opening band, whatever.
Actually, and so coming back, I just got endorsed by this company, Dream Studio Guitars, so they hooked me up with the bass, so shout out to them.
There you go, shout out to them.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I've really enjoyed talking to you, man, and I'm really excited to hear this new record. Send me over a song, whatever you can, anytime you can, or I'll just bug
Eric
for it.
Dude, I will,
it.
Man.
But
yeah,
I,
no,
I'm
I
stoked,
you,
and all the best moving forward, all the best with the family.
Dude,
thank you for taking the time.
Dude, it's been awesome. Yeah, let's play some shows sometime. Let's
fucking
hang out.
Do it. I'm ready, man.
All right, man.
AJ, thanks so much, man.
All right, man.
You have
a
great
going?
Night. Yeah, take care.
You too. All right, see ya.
See ya. So there it is with AJ. Great conversation. Thanks again so much, my friend, for doing that. And dude, a new Dangerous Summer record is coming out. And maybe I've even heard some of it. Thanks again, AJ, for that. And it's amazing how much the music industry really has changed over the last 4 years, but I think he's going to have a great time coming back and with some more mature bandmates and obviously Cody not being a part of the band anymore, and it does seem like those two really did collide. I wish I could play you a new Dangerous Summer song. A part of me just wants to ruin my whole career right now and play one, but I won't do that. I'm going to play a song that's one of my favorites from their first record, and I've actually used the music in the podcast on some of those little, you know, those little episodes where I say, there's no episode this week, but Happy New Year, or whatever it is. I've used this music before because I think this intro guitar part is fucking cool as hell. So here, check it out. I'm not going to talk over the music. I'm going to let this one just come in so you can hear the whole intro of the song. Here is The Permanent Rain, HD, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
You know I've lost a lot, but I won't let this die. You know I've got this.